Senator Sim.
I guess having, you know, again, other than the commas, I know that we've looked over the bill, but I would be inclined to adopt the amendments.
Madam Chairman, I can check this thing on the amendments dated 5-21-58, LC 2491 to Senate Bill 912-1, and the supplement amendments submitted by Mr. Hawes dated May 23, 1985. I would remove those amendments to Senate Bill 912.
Okay, is there discussion to Senator Day's motion to adopt?
And I include the comma that Senator Simmons is worried about.
Two commas.
Two commas, yes.
Deletion of those. Two commas on line 17.
Right.
Senator Fry. Comments? Objections to the motion on adopting the amendment? So ordered.
Bill of floor as amended to the due pass recommendation.
Senator Day moves Senate Bill 912 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Whoever carrier should be prepared to answer my question. Why is the emergency clause in here?
Okay, the carrier will be prepared to answer the question, whoever that is. Wouldn't it be nice if it might be you? Call the roll call, please.
Senator Day.
Aye.
Senator Fry.
Aye.
Senator Simmons.
Aye.
Senator Otto, Senator Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have people who are waiting on Senate Bill 17 to really ask. It would be my intention to move out Senate Bill 17 Tuesday. But the Department of Veterans Affairs and Howard Rankin are here today. They will not be here next Tuesday. I need to have anyone who has questions on that bill to...
I've got two questions I want to service.
To raise them now so that we can get the answers before they leave or whatever. So
I have Mr. Rankin and Mr. Magnus come up wherever they are. Now, I've discussed this, Mr. Magnus. You can identify yourself for the record. Mr. Rankin, identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Mangus, and I'm the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Howard Rankin. I'm a lawyer in Portland, Oregon.
Two questions I have is, first of all, I discussed with you privately the fact, and I've discussed with the public too, about having a trigger mechanism to return to a lower percentage than what we might grant you if you reach a certain level of reserve. And you are looking into those amendments, is that correct?
Yes.
And will your staff have something available for us next Tuesday?
Yeah, I believe there is a new draft.
Oh,
I don't have a copy.
I'm not aware of it. Okay. Could you tell me a little bit about that draft rather rapidly?
We need to make sure that they have it.
Mr. Rankin, I'd like to have you look at that. Well, we're efficient.
It's on page 5, the addition is page 5, line 19, and it deals with when the rates of interest on loans provided by the section produce balances that are in excess of prudent current and forecasted needs shall consider reducing the rates.
Now, my question here is, it isn't quite what I asked for. What I asked for was a dollar figure. I think we were looking at something like $500 million discussing with your staff. Is that not correct, Mr. Magnus?
It was originally the discussion.
Could it not be, could we not place in there the $500 million? That has been your target. That was set 5 years ago, as I understand. Is that correct?
The department has had an objective to try to obtain 1 year's debt service.
Which is $500 million.
Roughly.
Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Is there anything wrong with putting a dollar figure in there? Number one. And number two, Mr. Rankin, will that meet the muster, or does that cause any complications if that were written that way?
That would meet the muster, Senator.
Thank you. I like the way you guys respond. The second question I have is...
to do what? What kind of muster would it meet?
It would meet...
I want to hear from the financial people. $500 where and in what? And what does that mean?
I was speaking, Madam Chairman, to the bond sinking fund, and that are in excess of the current forecasted needs, where the director shall consider reducing rates of interest for loans in such a matter. If we put a $500 million figure, what that represents, according to...
I also know what the bond sinking fund, how it was created and why it's there, and how it didn't, how there's some advisability on why maybe they need, if they put money into the fund, they can't get it out for use for the very things that they need to keep their financial statements up. So I have a concern about specifically putting that much money into that kind of place when you may need it for other kinds of uses.
Okay.
And that's my concern about it. I need to know from those of you who are there to talk about a limit on the safety fund. I suppose if you don't ever put it in there, it'll never get to $500 million, and then doesn't make any difference anyway. I mean, that's another way you can...
I was just trying to get a trigger mechanism which would reduce the interest rate. Why they put it there, I guess, is for reserve, so they can cover...
Yeah, but some of them put it in depending on what they decide to do. So could I have a little bit of explanation about that issue?
Madam Chairman, Bill Henderson, Department of Veterans Affairs. Our sinking fund balance has three major pieces in it right now. One is a reserve for tax notes, which is an annual reserve. One is what we call the debt reserve, currently at about $218 million. And then we also have additional monies in the sinking fund that are not in the debt reserve. And the reason they're not in the debt reserve is because putting them in the debt reserve restricts them just to debt service purposes. And we may need those monies for other purposes, such as operating expenses or county veterans programs, whatever. So we have those three pieces in the sinking fund at this time. We have discussed the idea of hooking the trigger that Senator Day referred to a dollar amount. And the most specific thing that I could come up with was language that said that in the event that we were running above the debt service reserve in all years of the cash flow. This would include the bond debt service and also the tax note debt service. But even at that point, I would suggest that what that trigger not be an interest rate decrease, but would trigger a program to decrease rates. Because once we reach the point where we want to bring rates down, we have to ask questions like, well, now, which rates come down? How much do they come down? Do they come down evenly, unevenly? All the questions that we're going through raising them up will face bringing them down. So if we do put a trigger in, I would prefer that we trigger a report back or a program being established to bring them down. So we have a chance to look at it at that point.
Senator Day.
My concern here is that we're going to have to raise these rates, and there's a great deal of anxiety out here. Is it justified? Is it necessary? And if indeed the economy picks up and things change, how do we get some assurance that there's some type of trigger that will automatically reduce those rates, unless the director feels that there is some problem that didn't exist, maybe when we wrote this legislation, but it's just saying gives them the flexibility to say no, at least then reports the legislature why not. Now, I grant you, you like to write something that allows the director to act at will, but I guess my notion here is that if we're going to have to argue this pretty well on the floor, we can say, look, when you reach a certain level under a certain set of facts, this will be reduced unless the director feels that the health of the fund is such she can't do it. What is wrong with that kind of an approach if we set a dollar figure at 500?
Madam Chairman, Senator Day, let me read you one paragraph that I think says something pretty close to what you're after there. This would be a paren 4, but at such time as the DVA's annual cash flow, we have a certified annual cash flow, review prepared during two consecutive years in accordance with ORS 407-185, result in the projected sinking fund balances throughout the life of the projection that exceed the next year's debt service and operating expenses of the department, then the director shall prepare a program for reducing loan rates in such a manner as to ensure the future solvency and self-supporting nature of the department's program.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, I just surface that. That's one idea when we get into the debate on amendments that I would like to surface.
Well, you want to have their stuff drafted up?
I would.
And I guess one more time, I would ask Brad. I don't want all the pieces reprinted each time. I'd like to have them in the menu approach. It's hard to relate to them when we've got dash 8 for one little piece. I'd like to have the basic core of that, and then we'll work them out so we can.
I just want to suggest that's an amendment I'd like to look at on the menu, as he just described. Okay.
Is that getting close enough to?
Yes, that's close enough for me, as far as me. I just want to know if Mr. Rankin and Mr. Magnus, if we were to put that in there, were you comfortable on that it would do no ill will?
I'm comfortable it would do no ill will.
I would feel comfortable with wording on either one of these.
Madam Chair.
Senator Simmons.
I have a little different approach to it, in that it would try to keep it simpler. And the present increase in rate has grown out of a number of circumstances over a period of years. So I think if we try to hold the reduction in rates to a formula or to a trigger amount or whatever, we might find we're in rather serious trouble, and if we had to change it at some later date, then the public, and more particularly the veterans who are holding loans, would say, aha, they told us one thing and now they're changing it. So I have come up with this kind of a suggestion as an amendment to the bill, that it is the intention of the legislature that if financial statements and cash flow forecasts indicate the Oregon War Veterans Bond Sinking Fund exceed prudent and forecasted needs, interest rates charged under this section shall be lowered. And I think that's something that would not have to be changed at a later time, where a triggering mechanism might, in 5 years from now, prove to be wrong. So, and I'd like to get Mr. Rankin and Mr. Mangan and Henderson's reaction to that kind of statement, as opposed to a more detailed.
I guess I think we've got three approaches here. There's one in here, there's one here, and there's one here. And then there's not dealing with the issue of reduction of rates at all. But I would ask that the three different versions, including if you'll get that over to them, I'm concerned that that we don't get involved, that we don't somehow or another subject the director and the DVA to further lawsuits, saying once a year deciding that it's time for you to lower the rates and going out to get lawsuits on that end of things too. So I think I don't mind the regular reporting. I think we ought to see where I want to make sure that we don't either legally we're involved in the whole. We've heard a lot of discussion about lawsuits one way or another, and I want to make sure that what we do here is not going to open up the lawsuit issue in any number of other ways. So I want to make sure that we. So that's my concern. I want them to look at that.
Can you excuse a couple boys?
The missionaries are going.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
I want to. I guess I went into a different world. Now I know what the signal is. I do want to look at. I think we may have to have some kind of trigger, but I'm willing to listen to the other points of view. And I'll look at that. One other question I have. I can't ask another question. The right redemption. I want to examine that again and ask you this question, Mr. Magnus. If indeed I come to you as a veteran and say, hey, I can't make my payments, I need to stretch out something, or I need some help, you currently have the right to ask that they waive the right of redemption for 1 year. You have that right to negotiate that in that type of situation.
If it goes through the foreclosure process, that's what we're getting.
No, I'm not. They aren't to a foreclosure process yet.
Okay. If it's
they're coming to you and say, hey, I'm in trouble making payments. Under the current law, you have a right to negotiate extended payments, deferred payments, 6 months, then they start paying, right?
Right.
If they were to come to you at that point, do you have a right to
reduce the redemption period from 1 year to 0 or 3 months or what?
I don't believe I have that authority to deal with the redemption part of it. If I think I understand what you're getting at, is it reaches that point, it's not foreclosure, but they can't see anything in their future that's going to help them, and it would move that direction. We can accept a deed in lieu of foreclosure, and they would be giving up their right of redemption with the deed.
So you can negotiate, if you extend their period, for a period of time, they might have to give up the deed?
Well, they give up the mortgage on the basis of the, along with the...
They do give up that right of redemption when they deed.
Okay, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about them coming to you. A period of time when they're starting to have... They can't make the payments, or they negotiate a reduced payment value under the schedule that we've allowed you authority to do. Are you with me so far? It isn't a foreclosure.
Okay.
Can you negotiate with them for that purpose of...
Can you rewrite the contract?
Can you rewrite the contract and take out the redemption factor? Do you have authority?
No.
All right, Madam Chairman, I want you to look, I'd like, if you would, staff to look at the fact that where we could give them negotiating ability.
Okay, I have explored this at some detail once again with Senator Frye, and it would, there is, you know, and there are certainly more lawyers in this room than me.
Well, it was my understanding that we have in the mortgage statute that applies to every banker and every mortgage that exists, old-time mortgage in this state, a one-year redemption, state law. The question is, can we then go back and change that redemption time? Is that advisable to change the state law, which anybody who has a mortgage, not a trust deed, but a mortgage, and conform the year to, say, 6 months, which is more like the trustee deal?
Because they're asking for consideration of extended payments.
No. Not necessarily.
You can't, my understanding is you can't do it because they're asking for consideration of payments. That's still the law, but maybe I would ask them to respond one more time.
I was just informed by Bruce Brown, who's the assistant administrator of our operations division, that we have negotiated the redemption right. The individual is not yet foreclosure, comes to us and needs some additional time, and the way it's explained, that we say okay, but at that point of foreclosure, you will deed your right of redemption.
Okay. So you can, just what I asked.
It can, but and we can, rather than change the entire state law. Senator Fowler was concerned about changing the state law because you have.
I don't want to do that.
You can't. Then you'd be mucking around with everybody's redemption rights who doesn't happen to have a Vets loan, but any other kind of bank mortgage that was a mortgage. The olden days.
Well, to answer my question is they do have that current negotiated right.
They love that.
Yes. I'm sure they would.
Yes.
Well, Madam Chair, I've been exploring that too, and have asked Legislative Council to look into what they can do on it. Their offhand opinion without research is that the 23560, I think it is, could be changed to reduce that period.
I understand that, but that means
it would apply to loans which are foreclosed after the effective change in the law. Mr. Gruber gave me the figure, something like $30 a day it costs them for every day that the property's in foreclosure. So maybe something like a 6 months.
But I would say to you that I don't see, I have some strong feelings about not wanting to change that statute and bringing in all of the other mortgages that are out there.
I don't either.
Changing their terms and conditions. And if we wrote it, I've also explored, if we wrote it for the veterans loans, an exception for them at 6 months, then you get into the whole unequal, you get into constitutional problems, and I do have a...
I think Senator Day's question, too, private lenders do now negotiate some change in the contract in exchange for a deed in lieu of foreclosure, which is put into a trust.
They do the same thing.
And held, and then if the borrower doesn't complete his end of the deal, and he's out.
So, yeah. So I would hope, well, we've testified that you do it, that you can do it, that I see all the, and we need that for the record. Okay. Any other questions?
Have we come up yet with any kind of interest rate that's needed? The other question, as I recall, was whether the rate should be a uniform increase on all loans, whether it should be a proportional increase on interest, or whether
we're
going
to argue that.
Well, I'd ask Howard to speak briefly to that, if you'd like to, if you care to, if you need to, otherwise. I've had some further discussions with and I don't know where we are on that issue yet.
I think we have to debate it.
Mr. Rankin, do you have any
Madam Chair,
wisdom before you go away?
Let me respond just for a moment first to the three menus that you now have. And your question, I think, to me is whether or not any one or all three would be not susceptible to legal attack successfully. It would be my opinion that the first menu that appears now in the printed, not in the printed bill, but in the amended bills, 17, certainly would not be susceptible to successful attack. If you inserted Senator Day instead of the amounts in excess of prudent, current, and forecasted needs, a dollar amount, $500 million, I think that too would not be susceptible to successful attack. The reason being that should either of these events occur, all the director is going to do is consider reducing rates. The proposal that was suggested by Mr. Henderson, again, too, I believe, is not would not be susceptible to successful attack, because all that's going to happen is that the director then develops a program for reducing rates. No definitive action. The suggestion of Senator Simmons raises some more questions, because he has placed a more definitive, identifiable criteria that says you then shall reduce the rates. Now, my one concern, sir, is that you don't say to what. And there might be a question of ambiguity as to whether you go back to the 5 9/10, the 7 9/10, or the rate that it is right now before it's adjusted. I think the uncertainty of reducing the rates of your suggestion would be susceptible to a successful legal attack.
Madam Chair, if you added to that, reduce the rate, the interest rate, in an amount which would be consistent with maintaining future solvency and so forth,
then it too would be free, in my opinion, from successful attack as the other two are.
Okay.
Okay, anything else? We still haven't, I guess that's all. We still have the interest rate question ultimately before we deal with it.
Well, I understand that these gentlemen are going to be gone next week.
Yes.
Do we have time to get them to give an opinion about how the interest should be reduced, on what basis?
I
think they've all been given it to us, but
well, we've got three alternatives in raising interest. I'd rather go down. One is a flat percentage increase on all loans. Another one is a proportionate increase, a percentage of the existing rate increase in all loans. And the third is a formula of trying to adopt an increase on specific series of loans based upon the interest cost of those bonds that are supporting those particular loans. And I'm wondering,
Senator Simmons, I don't think we have, or at least it's not my intention, to deal with any of that. The issue is whether, I don't think we can predict what's going to be necessary. It just seems to me that we either set a cap, which is a cap, or we give the director authority to deal with the rates.
That's what's before us.
And I don't know how, we don't have any of our proposals that deal with that.
Any one of those, I presume you gentlemen can live with, just so we set it within the cash flow projections you're making, isn't that right?
Madam Chair, Senator Day, originally we come here and asked that the ceilings that presently existed be increased by 1%.
Sure.
And that we could make our adjustments within those ceilings. Then later during the discussions in that, the removal of ceilings was discussed. We, of course, are prepared and could work with either one of those options. There was the other amendments that were talked about last time in 17-5 of amending sub 3 of that statute to give a little more flexibility to the director, you know, something like this happened before, if action like that reduced the probability that it would be necessary to invoke 11A of the Constitution. We like that. That's not in the most current draft, but that's, you know, another one that gives you that flexibility that...
So if you raise your limits plus give you some flexibility, that's another option.
That's your preference, yeah. I mean, with the ceilings in there, it would be fine too.
Okay. Mr. Rankin.
Madam Chairman, if you would want to use the same general language for triggering the decrease in the rate as now appears in Senate 17 and authorize the director to increase the rates perhaps within caps, but giving the same general authority in such a manner as to ensure the future solvency and self-supporting nature of the program, that standard or criteria I think it would be a real help were there to be an attack on his action.
So you think such a manner as to ensure the future solvency and self-supporting nature is important in whatever we put in? Is that what you're saying to us?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. Senator.
I appreciate that, but there's also the chance that we've got to sell this increase, and so many people may be looking for a maximum other than the triggering mechanism. We have been able to live with the triggering mechanism so far, and it has not been challenged, has it?
No.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
He was saying even to strengthen the triggering.
I understand. I don't think that strengthens the trigger. I think what it does is diminish the authority of the legislature to review prior to the trigger being used. So it does strengthen the trigger for the director, yes. I just kind of like legislative review a little bit, gentlemen. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Comments?
I mean, talking about legislative review and that, I really don't understand, or I haven't heard a lot about what was done in the 70s, but I don't think there was a lot of review.
But there wasn't variable rate until
71. Yeah. But I think that is really our responsibility, your responsibility to have us come back to this committee and the House committee every session to report on where we're at and where we're going.
I'm not suggesting that you don't like that, but sometimes we're just a little suspicious of state agencies. We put a few little things in there. We'd like to have you come back and chinny up. One of those is maybe an outside limit.
Okay. Further questions?
Well, I think that we should know as a legislative committee what method they do plan to use to raise these rates. And I think it makes a great difference in what the public perceives and what the borrowers perceive is what's fair. And I think that should almost be a legislative decision to make.
Well, then I would say we have to wait a while to get that. If we wait for that, we are not ready to move on this bill Tuesday.
I'm ready to move on this bill Tuesday.
I just wanted to tell you.
No, I'm not going
to
wait for that.
Well, I don't want to wait either, but could we get an indication at least of what their present thinking is? That was what my
question. Well, their present thinking is to raise it 1% above the current authority, isn't it? Yes, sir.
We are requesting, originally we asked you to raise the ceilings 1% from the present ceiling
from the present ceiling. And you're prepared to handle it 1% above the present ceiling?
Yes, sir.
And that means that you would exercise authority that you haven't exercised already, plus 1%. Is that right?
Yes.
That's all. Yes, so the point is, there's some they haven't exercised the total authority for. So some of those loans they will raise above 1%. Are you raising the loans above? Are you going to raise some of those loans 1.5 that you haven't exercised authority, and others 1%, or are you going to raise them 1%? Period.
Those loans, we're asking for the ceiling to be raised on the 6.2s. That would give us a little more flexibility than 1%. But it is our intention to raise loans 1%.
Period. According to the projection you gave us the other day.
That's right.
All right. You still will have some unused authority.
Yes,
that you could still use.
Yes.
Some of that could be as much as 0.5%. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
I'm prepared
to move on Tuesday.
Well, Madam Chair, then up to now you have not raised all loans uniformly.
That's
no, sir.
And that was the crux of my question. You don't intend to rectify that imbalance in rates or in raises in rates that has gone on in the past?
No, for any number of reasons.